WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Monday Night Talk Format 4. A lot of your favorite races. Let's see, Jimmy Cantwell seat, the 4th Plymouth District State Rep seat.
That's going to be very interesting.
We're going to have those candidates.
Yeah.
We're going to have in the candidates from the 7th Plymouth District State Rep race. That's, of course, Jeff Deals.
Yep.
Outgoing state rep, who is currently a U.S. Senate candidate.
Yep.
That seat. We also have Tom Coulter.
Tom Coulter,
right,
yeah.
Who is now the Kingston Town Administrator.
Boy, did well, he locked out on that job, boy.
Absolutely.
He's going to be great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You got folks who are seeking that
right.
seat. So we're going to have some of the candidates. I think you just got a couple of Republicans that are running. I don't know if you have anybody other than Nancy Lenatra.
I don't think there's anybody opposing her in a primary.
Right. We have a state Senate race
yep.
that we'll do. I think it's the Dems that we'll be talking to.
Yep.
We have a couple of congressional races. We have a U.S. Senate. The three GOPs who are vying to face off against Elizabeth Warren. So please enjoy this particular show because the next couple weeks, starting next Monday night, we will have political forums. We'll be doing political forums as I'm buying myself a little time here so I can give folks a little bit of an idea, a little bit of a window into what we're doing as of next week. And next week might be the fourth Plymouth. I can tell you in just 2 seconds here as I scroll. No, it is the 12th Plymouth. The candidates who are vying in that show. And our first guest is here, warming up. And oddly enough, and I was ready to say it when I opened the program, and that is, I brought you a water, Mayor. We have Mayor Joe Sullivan, who is joining us for our segment this evening. So he's here. Welcome. How was the traffic?
Not a problem at all.
All right. George Brown will be very happy when we talk to him in a couple of moments. So Mayor Sullivan is going to be our guest for a nice segment this evening.
As long as you want. Thank you for the water.
Really? As long as you want to stay until 7 o'clock? We got Jeff Deal calling in.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'll stay for as long as you want me here.
Wow. Hey, you still... I still owe you a stint. Yeah. You and I brokered a deal.
We did.
Last time that you would be... But there was an exchange here, Mayor. You were going to give me the keys to the town of Braintree.
Right.
I would be mayor for the day. Watch out, Christine. A lot will happen on that day.
I think the people of Braintree would be very happy.
They'd be very afraid. It'd be only a day. It'd be 24 hours.
Okay.
But you would get to sit behind this microphone.
I don't think I could do this job.
Oh, cut it out.
You're too talented.
Yeah.
It's difficult to fill those shoes.
And, of course, I forgot to mention Peter Brown.
Yes.
Peter L. Brown.
Yes.
Who's hanging out this evening as well. It's a nice little roundtable going on here.
Yeah, it's very interesting today.
Peter has a couple of things. Not only is he going to be a co-host of the program, but Peter's got a couple of things that he's going to talk to us about being the chair, the board of directors for the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce. And you also still have something to do with the Pembroke
Chamber
of Commerce. And as well... I don't know if you noticed. Did you want to make a presentation to the mayor?
Well, Mayor Sullivan.
Sullivan.
You're going to be the first one to get one of these today.
Is this less than $50?
Less. That's less than $3.
Yes. Mayor, he started out by lying to you. You're the second person to get one.
He's the mayor.
I was the first.
I get it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. 1A, 1B.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is a cleaner.
Yeah, yes. that's fantastic. The travel size Tiny and Sons glass cleaner that we're unveiling tomorrow.
Way to go! Congratulations. So,
yeah, those are awesome.
This promotes what we want in government: transparency.
Exactly.
Very nice.
Yes,
Mayor, that was fantastic. Hold on to that thought, as we are going to pull over for a half a second here on the WATD shoulder, and this portion of traffic being brought to you by Brendan's Smoke Shop, online at brendansmokeshopma.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now Pope's Island, New Bedford. And George Brown is helping us get home one final time. George, how are the roadways?
Well, Kevin, southbound leaving the city, it's crawling from the tunnel down past South Bay. Then it breaks free for a little bit. It gets busy again. Granite Avenue down to the Braintree split. Northbound is tough from Braintree up past Aponset Circle. Then from Mass Ave right back up into the tunnel. Route 3 southbound is slow coming off the expressway down to about Union Street. Then it breaks free the rest of the way down along the South Shore. You'll find no delays getting over the Sagamore Bridge or the Bourne Bridge heading on or off Cape. You can be the difference between a child continuing their dream of education or leaving it behind. Help make the future brighter for one child at unbound.org. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm George Brown, the WATD Traffic Center.
Remember that summer it snowed in August?
The summer of 2018.
Yeah, then it snowed again in September.
Yeah, like a foot.
Then the blizzard in Halloween.
And then it snowed on Thanksgiving.
And then the blizzard on Christmas. Gotta love this New England weather. Whoa! Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. This summer is just getting started, and there's plenty of time to enjoy this great New England weather of ours. So have a great summer from us at Brennan Smoke Shop.
Make the best of it.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, well, you heard him during the intro. He's forever part of the Monday Night Talk intro. Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Mayor, welcome back to your home, Monday Night Talk.
Thank you, Kevin. Great to be with you and Peter.
Thank you.
You know what's fun? You know what's really cool? This is to kind of like to balance things out. Not only did we have Mayor Sullivan, but we had Mayor Hedlund as well.
Ooh. He was on earlier, Bob?
No. He's a part of the intro.
Oh, yes.
We're two nice, we're two mayors.
Yeah. Shouldn't we have told him that? We should have waited till
I should have waited. Well, here we are. We're coming out the other side of the 4th of July, and Braintree, one of the many parades that folks can enjoy here in the South Shore. How were the festivities for the 4th of July?
It was a spectacular parade. Just a great day for us. It was our 45th annual celebration for America, and we always do it the Saturday before the 4th, so we're really one of the first communities to kick it off. We've got a great partnership with the business community. We've got this July 4th committee that does a great job, but we also, the town supports the funding. It's about a 50% share of funding, and between the parade and the day's festivities and the fireworks at night, which were just spectacular, the cost of the program is about $90,000 to $100,000 annually, but it's just, it makes us, I think, shine. The governor was able to join us this year. He was working the crowd pretty heavily.
With good reason.
Yes, with good reason. There's something coming up in November this year. And we do beach balls. We have these beach balls with my name emblazoned on them and all, and they're very popular. They're fun, and so we throw those out to a lot of folks. And again, the parade had stopped for a number of years, unfortunately, but we brought it back when I was fortunate to become mayor back in 2008. We brought the parade back, and it's been just growing every single year. This year we had close to 100, what they call participants, between bands and the Shriners and just local our local championship basketball team, the girls. Wow. Bob Beach, who's a retiring PGA pro, from Braintree Municipal Golf, has done so much for our community. After 27 years, he stepped away. He was the grand marshal of the parade. It was just a great, great day. It was hot. It was really hot. Mm. It was a hot day, but it was also a day to celebrate America. And for us, we call it Braintree Day now. That's become kind of the moniker. And it's a great day of community pride.
I was going to ask, is any Braintree alumni? I believe there's a gentleman who's a WOMP, who is on Fox 25, who...
Yeah.
Is it Butchie Stearns?
Arthur Butch Stearns.
Butchie Stearns.
Yeah, I went to high school with Arthur. And
really?
We've got some great folks from Braintree. I mean, obviously, you know about history in terms of John Adams and John Quincy Adams.
Absolutely.
And if you read Dave McCullough's book on John Adams, it clearly states that the hometown is Braintree, not that other community a little north to us. And then... Peter Corbin, who was an Olympic bronze medalist in the floor exercise, you know, back when we weren't as competitive in gymnastics. 1976, Peter won, and I know his brother Paul. I went to high school with Paul, and his dad Marty was a tremendous veteran for our community. So a lot of great folks, you know, from our community of Braintree, both in the past but also currently, and I'm sure in the days ahead.
So we're kind of awaiting what's going to happen in regards to the fiscal 19 budget. Give me your thoughts on how Braintree is going to do. What kind of a piece of the pie is Braintree going to get in regards to?
Hopefully a big piece. No, we're fine. You know, we've got great representation in the legislature with John Keene and Walter Timothy and Representative Cusack. And so it's a team approach. As you know, Kevin, I've been fortunate to serve in the legislature for 6 terms. And so, you know, there's a process associated with this. You know, we're now just July the 9th. I know they've got continuing resolutions to keep the funding coming. But we're in good shape. We finalized our budget. Town Council approved our budget back in late May. We were about a month ahead of the schedule. So May 29th, I believe it was. So we're in good shape financially. We're doing a number of school projects, both throughout the entire system, but also one, the East Middle School, and now we've got the South Middle School, $124 million between the two projects over the course of the next 2.5 years, working with the Mass School Building Authority, a significant roads program that we're working on. We're not going to stop our roads program, despite the fact that National Grid has an issue that's going on right now. We're going to continue to do our road work, which we think is necessary. And so parks and recreation are all getting, you know, a huge facelift, and we've got our capital plan in place, and we're working it right now. And operating, from a standpoint of the operating budget, you know, we're in good shape. So things are good. I mean, you always got to monitor the fiscal health of any community is the most important element, because you can't provide those services if you don't have a strong financial foundation, which we've been able to put in place over the past 10 years.
What's it like to have a champion like a Senator Keenan up there on the Hill fighting for every dollar that he can get for his district, which includes Braintree?
Sure. John's been a great resource for us and a great advocate. And I want to say again, Walter and Walt Timothy and Mark Cusack have been as well. It's a good team. And having served, I know how the process works, and you really need to be diligent. You really need to work it. And all three of them have done a great job for us. John, you know, has served in the municipal level, at the county level in terms of government, and so now he's at the state level for us, and he's doing a very good job for us. So we're pleased. We had some earmarks in there in terms of public safety. We got some money associated with the opioid crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But from a standpoint of local aid, educational support, our legislative colleagues have done a nice job for us.
Well, I hear a lot of communities who, you know, aren't necessarily as fortunate, who are saying, we need to get money. When it comes to that educational formula, we need to get our... It's nice to hear at least there are communities that are able to do well when it comes to local aid, Chapter 70 monies, Chapter 90, depending on what it is that you need, whether it's, you know, to get roads done or be able to provide an education.
Well, on the roads program, you know, we match it. We actually do double what we get from state support on our roads. We'll spend $2.7 million this year on our road system. We've been doing that annually, and about $900,000 of that comes from the state. So we're doubling essentially what we get there. In terms of education, the local aid numbers, we have a growing enrollment. Those are very strong. Mm. But our dependency in Braintree on local aid is not as pronounced as other communities. We're at about 17%. So essentially 83% of the budget is balanced with the local revenues of Proposition 2.5, which is, as you know, the tax cap. So we're in pretty good shape. We can kind of manage and control our own destiny. We have obviously a strong commercial base, and so you get a new growth factor associated with the redevelopment of properties. We added a new Marriott Hotel. Most recently, we've had a number of restaurants come in, a new Davio's restaurant at the South Shore Plaza, which is a great spot. And there's a lot that's happening that's really positive as we look to redevelop parcels. We've got Amazon that wants to take 220,000 square feet in one of our industrial parks. The planning board's reviewing that right now. So there's a lot of economic activity that's really helping us grow.
I thought I read something that you were putting forth a request that there should be an alternate for the planning board. What's the thought to that?
Well, the state allows for an associate member, and essentially, and you can get really technical on this stuff, but both for the applicant as well as for the monitoring of the town on zoning issues, if you had an associate member. Right now we have 5 members. They're all volunteers, appointed by me, but they were volunteers. And sometimes there's schedules, there's conflicts, and they're not able to meet a certain meeting. If they miss a meeting or a special permit on a zoning, you need a supermajority. You need 4 votes in order to get something approved. If you miss a meeting, you cannot vote, have a final say on the final vote, if you will. So having an associate member would allow for 6 members to sit during the planning board process. And these can take, you know, an application can take 3, 4, 5 months of oversight. We've got a very strong professional staff, but in the end, it's up to the committee members to make the vote. And so if you miss one of those meetings along the way on a zoning special permit requirement, which is a supermajority, it's better to have 6 people in place that can take a vote, which 4. Only 5 can participate in the actual vote, but 4 would have to make it affirmative. If a member misses a meeting, then that associate member, if he or she has attended each one of the meetings, then they would have the ability to vote on it as well. So it doesn't take away the supermajority. It doesn't apply to subdivision proposals, but in terms of general zoning ordinances, which the planning board and the town council have an oversight role, having an associate member is going to be helpful to, I think, maintaining a strong process.
How do you go about changing a configuration of a board like that? What does the town charter say?
Yeah, we don't have it. Well, first of all, state law allows us to do this. We don't have it currently in our general ordinances. Okay. So I would need, and it's in front of the town council this evening, with you, Kevin, but it's in front of the town council this evening.
Do you get a good feeling?
Well, I've talked to members of the council. My sense is that they're going to be supportive. They understand the situation we find ourselves in. And they look at this the way I look at it. It just gives us greater level of oversight and, in the end, greater flexibility without taking away that supermajority piece, which I think is important. So the council will hopefully vote affirmatively tonight. Then it has to go to the planning board. They need to adopt it. And then I'd have to sign it into law. But I think we can get it done, hopefully, within the next month or so.
Excellent. Okay, we're speaking with the Braintree Mayor, Joe Sullivan, who is our guest. He's going to kind of hang out with us this evening. Peter, did you want to ask a question?
Well, being originally from Braintree, the affordable housing aspect of it, as far as what do you see in the future of affordable housing that's coming up in Braintree, especially for the interim people that are coming up and the kids that you want to have stay in the in the town?
Sure. I also want the seniors to stay as well.
Right.
And you said you're a former Braintree.
Yeah, I lived there.
You're always
yeah, exactly.
You're always
yeah,
a
exactly,
Braintree
yeah.
with us.
You'll always be a
womp.
Well, it's funny. He was talking about the 4th of July parade, and I got a picture of my dad driving a tank in front of Thayer Academy.
Okay.
When the tanks were parked over with where Trefankton is now.
Yeah,
where
Charlie Trefankton's place is on Union Street. So in terms of the housing piece, you know, I've had a lot of conversations, not only within Braintree, but also regionally with other mayors, Tommy Koch and Bob Hedlund, as well as Marty Walsh. I hosted a Metro Mayors meeting in Braintree back in early June to talk about the need for additional housing. There's no question that, we have in the South Shore, in the Chamber, the South Shore Chamber's done a lot of work on this. We have a graying population.
Right.
And there's no ability to retain a lot of our seniors who, quite frankly, would like to sell their, 15,000 square foot subdivision home that they've had in the family for years. I will tell you, the market is so strong right now. Every home in our community is priced aggressively, and people even getting above asking. So we need to create some additional housing so these seniors can stay in the community. This is where their family is. This is where their religious institutions. This is where their friends are. Their social atmosphere. But with additionally a need to have types of alternative housing. Not everybody wants us, that subdivision anymore. So there's a lot of speculation from folks who come to town and look at opportunities associated with development. We try to monitor that very closely. We want to make sure that there's not something that we don't think is going to be beneficial to our community. But we are working on a housing production plan that's going to, I think, meet the needs over the course of the next 4 to 5 years as our economy. And every economist will tell you, from those I've had a chance to speak with, that now through 2020, 2021, the economy is going to remain strong. So there is a need for housing, both for younger families, but also for our seniors who want to stay in the community.
Well, that's like with not only with the seniors, but the younger people. You're talking about Amazon and all the the stuff that's coming into town, sure, especially in the industrial parks, which is a lot of younger families going to create a lot of jobs for them.
Sure, yeah.
And that's where that starter home aspect of it is not there anymore.
Right, right. And you know, I think it's important to understand that not everyone, and I'll underline this point, wants to cut the grass.
Right.
You know, they want to shovel the driveway.
Right.
You know, they're not looking for that. And the family unit, quite honestly, is small. I mean, I'm one of six.
Right.
And so as you have smaller family units, yet the population continues to grow, those smaller family units don't need those bigger homes anymore. Right. And they have, you know, there's different lifestyles that come into play. So that's why the housing stock needs to be different as well. And candidly, with that comes a level of density that sometimes developers ask for, and we need to monitor that and make sure that whatever comes to our community is sited properly and the level of oversight that we have, that we plan it all properly.
I'm going to shift gears here just real quick, if I could, while we have the mayor here joining us, Mayor Joe Sullivan from Braintree. I want to talk a little bit about something that's a growing trend here in the Commonwealth with communities getting involved with a lawsuit against the opioid makers. Yeah. And the distributors, your community has joined that lawsuit. Yep. Give me your thoughts into getting involved with this.
Well, we've got a challenge associated with opioid use in town. Every community does, and if you're not acknowledging that, then you're just not facing reality. We've had together now for a period of time a community partnership on substance use. It's made up of a series of folks. I have a municipal director of that group for us. And, you know, we just decided that, quite honestly, as others have, enough is enough. And we're going to take on Big Pharma. We're going to do it in a way that I think is going to be responsible. But they've created a real, when I say they, I mean the pharmaceutical companies have created a real problem in our country. And every community is affected by it. And so we're pushing back. We've retained two very strong legal teams, one locally and then one nationally, that we think can offer us some real help. And it's really not as much about the money, although the money would be helpful in terms of providing the resources for those who face these addictions. Not only those who unfortunately have chosen to use drugs for whatever reason, but the families associated, and we need beds, and we need recovery areas, and there are a series of steps that we can take as a community, but there are financial resources needed to be able to provide those level of services, and I think those who some might say created, I'll say helped create the situation, and helped is not said in a favorable way, they need to be held responsible. And so we're going to do the best that we can to see that these pharmaceutical companies are held responsible for the crisis that they've helped create.
As a person, an educated individual, you look at the lawsuit against tobacco.
Yeah.
And while it pales in comparison, it's vastly different. We know that it was on a grand scale once the lawsuit was settled.
Right.
The amount of money and what the damages that were, you know, they were. Paid out by Big Tobacco, even where they have to put out advertising saying, hey, you know, we misadvertised that, you know, the health, you know, concerns, the problems that come with smoking. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that this lawsuit is something that could grow and could be that big like the lawsuit against tobacco?
Yes, I do. And we may not see a result of this for another 7, 10, 12 years.
Goodness.
But we need to start now. And my hope is that by planting a flag on this issue, we're sending a strong message as our other communities. Number one, that we're going to hold Big Pharma responsible. But number two, equally as important, we're going to stand by those families who've been impacted through this opioid crisis. It's very, very painful to watch. I think we all know family members or friends who've been impacted by this, who've lost loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't stand by and just allow this to go unnoticed. And we're working very hard. And again, we may not get a result 10, 12 years from now. Quite possibly at that time, I won't be mayor of the community of Braintree, a community I love, but I'll hopefully have taken a responsible action to see that we're addressing this crisis in a very aggressive manner.
Probably just get another minute or two left. Is there anything that you want to take a a moment or two to kind of share with the listeners, the folks who are in Braintree who are listening, and the folks who are driving home this evening?
Yeah, I guess I'd say there's two things I'd just like to comment on briefly. Number
Absolutely.
One would be the MBTA, and you know, as you probably have seen, you know, the T is looking to try to raise prices at some of our parking garages here on the South Shore, mm-hmm. which myself and others, including Senator Keenan and Mayor Koch and others, have pushed back on. So we're hopeful that the MBTA is now listening to us and we won't see the $3 increase, which is about a 40% increase that was proposed. That will not happen. We're going to have a meeting next Monday, the 16th, and hopefully we'll get a good result on that. And then I just think, you know, the whole issue of civility. You know, there really is, in terms of public discourse, it's important to have conversations that offer some guidance for our communities. But we need to do it in a much more civilized manner. And I can see it. I can feel it when I'm out talking with folks, and some are very civil and others are not so civil. So I think it's an important point that we need to be thoughtful with one another. We need to respect other people's opinions while we, as a community and as individuals, conduct ourselves in the best manner possible to create a level of decorum and a level of professionalism that we can all respect one another at the end of the day.
I think there's just been a slide over the past 10 years, whether it's the advent of social media,
yeah.
because people, some of the things that people say and post and do on social media, yeah. they wouldn't do that in front of, there was a time and a day that you wouldn't behave such a way in front of another individual or right. say the things,
right.
but people just will post and say things. You're like, oh my God, what is this? Would you talk to your mother with that mouth? You know, it's like, I'm using a little slang here.
Yeah,
you know,
it's right. true.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's. I kind of wonder, because I watch what I post on social media. I'm very careful because, again, I think I'm a professional. I try to act like a professional, and I carry myself as a professional.
Right, right.
And I also, I'm considerate of other people's feelings, but sometimes I just don't think that people know how to be considerate of another human being, and they're more locked into focus with what's affecting them and what's bothering them and feeling that they behave outwardly, whether it's in public or on social media,
right.
it's okay.
Yep. We don't do too much social media. I don't do it personally. We do.
You're not missing anything, Joe.
Well, we do it through my office, and we've got this Braintree Blue newsletter that has about 1,200 people now. And it's just a factual monthly newsletter that goes out, and we tweet now, but we don't tweet anything negative. We just tweet positive. Yeah. Try to just conduct ourselves in the way that hopefully others will conduct themselves as well. I just want to make this one last comment, if I could.
Please do.
This former speechwriter, Peggy Noonan, was a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but she writes for the Wall Street Journal. And I came across an article that I read about over a month ago now. And she talked in the article about the whole issue of civility and respecting one another. And she wrote about, the distinction between cynicism and skepticism. And that has stuck with me. I think that it's good to have some healthy skepticism. It's good to have watchdogs and people, you know, monitoring what their government is doing. That's healthy for a good, strong, vibrant democracy. The cynicism piece, that everybody's a bad apple, or that, there's all this mischievous activity, whatever the term would be, that part of it, that doesn't contribute to the discourse that we need, both in our communities and in our country. And I thought Peggy Noonan, who was a great speechwriter again for Ronald Reagan, who was the great communicator, I thought she hit it really, really well. And I was struck by that article to the point where I made copies of it and distributed it to my department heads. And I have copies of it in the lobby of the small lobby of my office at Town Hall. And it's just something to reflect on every now and then. A healthy democracy, a healthy dialogue. Creates healthy communities and a healthy country, but let's make it a healthy dialogue and a healthy conversation.
Amen. And always, and as the Osmonds once sang, as you talk about apples, one bad apple doesn't spoil the whole bunch.
Was it the Osmonds or the Jackson 5?
I thought it was the Osmonds.
No, it was Jackson 5.
Was it Jackson 5?
Yeah.
I thought it was the Osmonds.
That's okay.
It's all right. It was the same era, no?
Hey, well.
It was, yeah, but don't forget the cow sills.
We're going to step aside, and when we come back, on deck, yeah. State Rep, U.S. Senate candidates. Yeah.
Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center. This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, Chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back for our next segment. And of course, we actually had a little bit of audio replay, and thanks to Mr. Nelson for playing that song. And there's a little bit of a correction. It was the Osmonds who did One Bad Apple. But I believe that our two guests here actually were told, given misinformation. So
I thought it was Michael Jackson.
Me too.
It
sounds just like him, yeah. That's
we'll have to ask Reptile your thoughts. Do you have any fond memories of the Osmonds?
Hey, Kevin, how you doing? You know what? The Mormon church just seems to stay in the news somehow, whether it's Osmonds or Utah and Mitt Romney, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Now, Romney couldn't sing like Donny Osmond, Jack. No. You know that.
Yeah. I have a true life story about Donny Osmond. I was working in Washington, D.C. with Kathy Jo. We were working on a 4th of July concert when we were in television, and it was a PBS broadcast, the Capitol 4th, and Donny Osmond was supposed to be the host, and he called in about a week or two before and had to cancel that he was going to be the host for it. So they had to scramble and get a new host in a very short period of time. And I took the phone call, and on the other line, this person says, this is Donny Osmond. Can I have the producer? And so I put him on a hold and got the producer. I could tell from his voice it wasn't going to be good news.
It's funny you mentioned, you mentioned Donny, because I actually, my God, 15 years ago, Donny Osmond visited the Raynham-Taunton area. And he was promoting a new CD, and I was the print media reporter who got sent out to cover him. And he was probably one of the nicest guys I ever met.
Wow. He was Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. He was the lead character.
And you know what? I thought he did a fantastic job with the Pyramid Show. I mean, it wasn't the same as the Pyramid that we knew with Dick Clark.
Right.
But he did. I thought he did a fantastic job.
Well, Marie Osmond was pretty good at herself.
Yes. Now they're both in Vegas if you want to see them. Representative, it's funny, we got Braintree Mayor Joe Sullivan here, and one of the topics we started off talking with him about earlier this evening was parades, 4th of July parades. You?
Jeff was with us.
You were, what was it like walking around and being a part of the Braintree parade and some of the other parades you did this year?
Well, I'm just going to real quickly to brag list that we did Braintree first, and then I did Plymouth and Duxbury and Wakefield and Gloucester. I feel like there was one more in there, but it was, first of all, a great 4th of July celebration. You know, I know Braintree's a few days before, but honestly, the people, you know, they have the spirit, they line the streets, the people who are in the parade, they're there and they're smiling and they're just interacting. It's great to see Independence Day, the birthday of America being celebrated still to this day. And it's because, and I heard your conversation with the mayor before I came on here, you know, talking about the fact that there are a lot of good people that don't complain all the time, that are out there civically minded and doing things like being involved, whether in the parade or watching it. And that's really always inspiring for me, is this time of year getting out there and talking to people when the weather's nice. And, you know, and Braintree Parade was beautiful. And Mayor, congratulations on, you know, another successful year.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. And thanks for joining us on that day. It was really nice.
Peter, do you have a question? Peter Brown.
Well, so let's go right to the point. So what do you think about what's going on in Washington, and how do you feel about the less civility that we've been having between the parties, and how can we fix it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. When I'm going around the state right now, you know, I've been campaigning for over a year for U.S. Senate. I've hit a lot of cities, obviously beyond just parades, events around the state, talking to people. I feel like people are very tired of the finger-pointing, the yelling at each other and getting nothing done, and they feel like Washington's been overlooking them. I feel like my opponent has not necessarily been focused on Massachusetts, and so that's what I'm trying to gauge from them is, you know, what do they want to see from, you know, their elected leaders? What can I do to try to help if I'm elected, you know, down in Washington as a U.S. senator? And so, you know, I think there is a disgust generally with Washington's incivility, and I think, unfortunately, you guys were talking about social media as well. Mm. It seems to be an outlet where people can sort of vent their frustrations at other people and feel like there's no repercussions, but, you know, we all live in these communities. We tend to know each other, and, you know, you can kind of track down who said what about who. I don't know. I guess it's strange that social media has become what people think sort of is a place to air your grievances about somebody else, and that there'll be no impact on that person or no repercussions for, you know, how you treat people, I guess. And that's disappointing as well.
Well, and that's the issue that we're having, because the leadership, as far as the federal leadership, that's where that's trickling down from there. And when you have these tweets and these, you know, Facebook posts and back and forth from the leader of the country coming down, then it gives people permission to go and act this way. So that's where my question is, my second question is, how can we fix that? And it's not just the parties, it's just seems the general criteria right now is that who has the biggest hatchet, and let's go after them, and hopefully they'll go away. And that's not getting anything fixed or any kind of discourse to try to work.
Right. No, I mean, it's really strange to see the fact that everybody who seems to get into higher office, especially in Massachusetts, we seem to be the auditioning ground for Washington all the time. I mean, you know, when Joe Kennedy was on TV a few months ago doing a response to the State of the Union, you know, everybody was focused on, you know, is he going to be using this as a chance to run for something bigger? Seth Moulton up on the North Shore takes shots at the president quite often, and, you know, people wonder, is he going to be running for president? Of course, Deval Patrick is thinking about running. Elizabeth Warren, it seems, clearly wants to run for president in 2020. So Massachusetts, you know, and again, this is Mitt Romney. This goes both sides of the aisle. It's sort of like the Hartford of the old days, back when they used to have a play for Broadway. They'd try it out in Hartford. If it played there, they'd send it to Broadway. Well, it seems like Massachusetts is where politicians, you know, go to audition for a job at the White House or in Congress. But to me, you know, and I think Mayor Sullivan exemplifies this, he's able to work with a Republican governor. He's able to do this without the negativity, the blame game, and I think that's what people are looking for, is someone who is actually just going to dig their heels in and work, and not dig their heels in and yell at somebody else. I think that's kind of what the difference is, and hopefully we get back to that. I mean, I think right now the discourse has caused a situation where every issue that comes up, every sort of flashpoint issue, you know, every week it seems to change, the anger, the outrage, and it's just not helping us really solve some of the key problems that we have. Now, that being said, you know, I think that we are seeing some progress economically. I mean, Massachusetts has $1.2 billion in new revenue they didn't expect to have. That's a financial boon, and I think the 2017 tax reform that Congress passed was a great part of that. You know, again, I have to throw the point in there that my opponent, Elizabeth Warren, voted against that, called it crumbs, but let's just say that I think I've seen a lot more companies hiring, growing, and I think that's a positive sign. So, yes, we've got a White House that tends to tweet negative stuff, and we've got people in Congress that seem to just can't wait to get on MSNBC or CNN or Fox and yell at each other. I'd really love it if we could simmer down the anger and just get back to what the American people need.
Well, so while we have, again, we have he's State Representative and U.S. Senate candidate Jeff Deal joining us. What are you hearing? What are you hearing from the folks out there? Because you and I had a conversation a couple of days ago, and one of the things that I found interesting was, is that people recognize you. People know who you are. What are they saying to you? What is their feeling as to, you know, if they decide to vote for you, that the issue or the issues that they want you to be down there, you know, tackling?
Well, you know, I mean, I think people have been pretty aware of some of the key things that have been happening, especially in our region. Now, the opioid crisis that's on the Cape, extremely serious, as if it's not serious everywhere, but it's a big problem. But then if you go out to Western Massachusetts, they're dealing with infrastructure, and not just roads, they're dealing with communications infrastructure issues.
Right.
They've got wireless, telecommunications gaps where you can't get cell service or internet service in large sections of Western Massachusetts. That really is going to prevent any businesses or industry from wanting to go out there. So it creates problems of being able to deliver on things like healthcare. I mean, the state had to, a couple of years ago, incentivize doctors to go out there. They would do a loan forgiveness on a portion of their college degree if they would serve a certain period of time out in Western Massachusetts as a doctor. So that's how extreme the situation is in Western Massachusetts. But then if you go to Gloucester or Scituate or New Bedford and the fishing ports, you'll actually see that, you know, we have some issues as far as competitiveness with our lobster catch. You know, Canada is selling to the European markets with a 9% lower rate than we have. And then at the same time, you've got NOAA that's holding back on helping or approving transfer of 40 federal fishing licenses in New Bedford. The richest port in the United States is right here in Massachusetts in New Bedford. And the ground fishing fleet, the backbone of the industry, is for 8 months now been held up because nobody is getting the federal agency NOAA to move on getting these licenses transferred. So there's a lot of work that can be done right now, and there's a lot of long-term vision that needs to be, work that needs to be done in Washington as well. And again, if I'm fortunate enough to get into office, I think people know my track record up on Beacon Hill is to try to work on the issues that people in my district have asked me to, and that's why for four terms, I've been lucky enough to be reelected the last two unopposed, because I think people know I said what I was going to do up on Beacon Hill, and I try to live up to my word.
Jeff, this is Joe Sullivan. Let's pick up on that comment about infrastructure that you just made, and I agree with you. I think there needs to be a focus in Western Mass, Eastern Mass, throughout our Commonwealth, throughout the region. If we were to focus on transportation and the expenditure necessary to get our infrastructure to a level of number one, safety, but also just in terms of productivity, creating jobs, the economy, you know, that is something, you know, I'll go with your point earlier as well, that, you know, people want results. They don't want rhetoric. And I think
right. If
we can work in a way that's going to be productive and we can create a strong transportation network, doesn't that help us all? Doesn't that help the economy?
Absolutely. I mean, of course, the Braintree split, I mean, right there in your neck of the woods is
right. Something
that's been a problem for a long time. It's nice to see Route 18 getting widened. It's nice to see Route 3 getting additional lanes. But at the same time, they keep putting more and more businesses in the Seaport District of Boston without any real solutions as to where we're going to get additional traffic in and out of the city effectively. You know, and that's, I guess, one of the biggest things. Down in Washington, they're getting ready to put together a transportation bill that is going to be for the entire country. To me, you know, with a Republican-controlled House, Senate, and White House, all I'm asking is to be that safety valve so that when every now and then you have the Republicans in D.C. controlling everything, it'd be nice to have one Republican in the congressional delegation that could have a seat at the table with the White House and Congress and try to convince them to put a lot more of that transportation funding our way. And again, I just have to add that when you have a U.S. senator that seems to be, you know, resisting every nominee, every bill that comes out of Congress, it doesn't help with that seat at the table. So, look, all I want to do is be a partner in Washington to make sure Massachusetts gets what it needs as far as resources. And believe me, Joe, commuting north each day to Boston, I know the needs we have for transportation, absolutely.
So, as I mentioned earlier, Representative, is that we got a number of political forums coming up, starting with the 12th Plymouth. We got two Republicans who are going to be jousting come next Monday night here on Monday Night Talk, and we got also for Jimmy Cantwell's seat, we're going to have the candidates for the Dems and the GOP, who are hoping to be, you know, with the next the next person after Jimmy Cantwell, as well as your seat, your state rep seat, which, you know, you're hoping for bigger and better things. But come on the 13th, we get the U.S. Senate, the three GOP, and we're hoping we get to see you here at the WATD to do a political forum with us. Is that still in the works? And what other forums are you going to be doing as well?
Yeah, we've been given several different dates. We've offered dates back, and the only problem is that right now I'm actually serving currently as a state representative on Beacon Hill, and until the end of July, I'm subject to being called in for any session, and usually Wednesdays are certain dates, the ones that we know we have sessions. Tomorrow was an unexpected date I'm called in. So the only thing that we're concerned about is making sure that I don't have a conflict with my initial work as representative right now.
And if folks want to find out more about your campaign, how can they do that?
They should go to www.dealforsenate.com. That's D-I-E-H-L-F-O-R, Senate.com. We'll get you a free lawn sign, a free bumper sticker, and you can, of course, check a box to volunteer. We'd love to have you get involved with the campaign. It's an important race, obviously, and September 4th is the primary, and then, of course, November 6th is the general election.
And, of course, the folks around the Commonwealth could just keep an eye out for the Deal RV, right?
Deal on Wheels. We bought that used on Craigslist, and we've been driving around the state using it. It's a great way to talk to people. They see the brand, you know, the logo on the outside and all that stuff. They know that that's where I'm at, and they can talk to me. And we're going to turn it into a mobile Senate office after the election's over. So it certainly is exciting, and we look forward to, like I said, a chance to win in November.
Representative, thank you so much for joining us here on Monday Night Talk.
Thanks, Kevin. Take care.
You got it. All right. We're going to step aside. We have put the first hour of Monday Night Talk in the books. No, we really have. When we come back, the second hour of Monday Night Talk, I promise you, here on 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield. WMEX Boston. We don't want
to sing. I'm Tiny of Tiny and Sons Glass. Broken windshield? Insurance covers it. Tiny works with all insurance companies.
Hey, Dad, we work with Allstate?
Yes, we do.
How about Amica?
Yes,
how about Arbella?
Very good.
And Commerce?
Very nice.
Even Geico?
Geico, yes.
Hanover?
Hanover Insurance? Good people.
Liberty Mutual is supposed to be pretty good.
Liberty Mutual? Yes, sir.
MetLife?
MetLife, yes.
Pilgrim?
Pilgrim, I know them.
Hey, Plymouth Rock. How about Plymouth Rock?
Plymouth Rock, excellent.
All right, Progressive, I heard. And Safety?
Safety. Safety is my friend.
And those guys at Tower Group. I thought they were tough, but they've been pretty good lately.
They should buy me lunch.
That's right. And how about USAA, the troops?
USAA is perfect.
We support the troops. We work with them all.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, second hour of Monday Night Talk. Later this hour, Captain Paul Hebert. You know who he is?
No.
Do you know who he is?
No. Honest with you.
He happens to be on a very popular New England-based cable show.
Oh, Wicked Tuna.
Wicked Tuna. Yeah, because you looked at the paper.
They did.
You cheated. You totally cheated. Now you owe me two of the mini economy size Tiny and Sons auto glass.
I'm going to send one to Jeff.
But no, he will be joining us as well as speak with Brock DeMille, Bill Carpenter. But first, we start with you, and we have a chance to talk about a couple of things coming up.
Yeah.
First, starting tomorrow night.
Well, tomorrow night, Pembroke Chamber, Long Pond Physical Therapy. We're going to have an after hours from 5:30 to 7:30, right there across the street from McGee Toyota's used car. It's a great spot. We usually have between 40 and 50 people there. And Brian Fagan does a great job. He's been in business 15 years between Pembroke and Plymouth, so that'll be a good aspect of it. And then let's see, coming up this Saturday, we have the Hydro for Heroes jump.
Very nice.
Sky jump, yeah.
Wait. Are you going to be on the ground taking pictures?
No. Yeah, I'll be taking pictures. Megan Doherty, our membership director.
You want to strap onto some dude who's going to pull the ripcord?
They said it was too fat. I signed the papers, right? So the Plymouth Chamber always
said that you were kind of, sort of.
Wow. But I signed the papers to do it because the Plymouth Chamber always gets involved every year, and it's usually the chair and the executive director. And they asked me to do it. I said sure, signed the papers, signed up, and then after I signed it, they sent me back the waivers to, you can't sue if I die or anything like that. So whatever. So then I read the fine print, and it says you have to be at 225 pounds, right? Yeah. So I was like, this was like an October.
Do you want to say how close you are to 225? Would you rather not?
I'm right now. This is the story. So I was 309.
I like stories.
I was 309 in August.
No, sir.
Yeah.
Last August?
309 pounds, right. So I tried to lose weight, and I said, I'm doing. Right.
It's tough.
You know, the Cheez-Its and the goldfish and all that stuff. It's just tough.
You know, it's like I do so well during the day.
Doing really well.
My missus will pack me a fantastic salad. I'll have different things that are really healthy. But at around 9:30 at night, Kevin, come eat me.
Yeah,
it'll be the Oreos. It'll be the peanut butter.
Yeah,
it'll be it's a cornucopia of things.
Yeah,
the bag of chips, the pretzels that say, nobody loves me like you.
The pretzels and the hummus. That's my thing. But anyway, so to make a long, very long story short.
So you're down to 275?
I'm at 279.
That's awesome.
So Megan Doherty was kind enough to take my place, and she would only do it if I did a weight challenge, which I did. I lost 30-something pounds.
God bless you.
So, and I donated like $20 a pound to the Hydro for Heroes.
Awesome.
Yep. So between the two of us, we raised almost $4,000 to jump.
Wow.
And the number one person was Kevin Hennessy from Rainbow Benefits, and he raised almost $7,000.
And so this is taking place. This jump is taking place where, when, and how?
In
Hanson. Can people get involved?
Well, yep. You can still donate online for Hydro.
Family in the airport?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Hot diggity dog.
Yeah. So you can still donate online, hydroforheroes.com.
Okay.
You go to the Sky Challenge, and it's right there, and you can pick a person, and you can just go for it. It's incredible. So that's my story for that.
Okay. What else do you got?
We got a lot of stuff coming up. Next week, we have
You got 5 minutes, so.
I'm working on it.
Spit it out.
Working. So, all right, help me out here.
Okay.
So we have the Draken. It's a Viking ship coming to the... Yes, Kevin.
Wait. Did the Plymouth County Commissioners, did they approve the dredging of the harbor?
They dredged the harbor, but see the...
Ah, come on!
This is going to show why we need to dredge the harbor. We're going to have the first Viking ship to visit America.
You need me to get on the horn to Dan Pallotta and
guys
need to get your dredge machine that you spent all that money on.
Listen to me.
Okay.
Listen to me, Kevin. The dredging of the Plymouth Harbor is going to be the best thing for the economy on the South Shore.
I'm afraid of what's going to happen to those Viking oars as they're...
They're going to help with the dredging with the oars.
Okay.
So they come in... Right, exactly. They come in on the 17th at 3:30, so we're going to have this big welcoming committee.
Oh, nice.
So they're going to park at the new fish pier that we just finished by Cabby Shack. They're going to be from the 18th to 19th to 20th. They're going to have tours from 10 to 7. It's for kids of all ages, adults of all ages. I got my Thor hammer all set. Did you know? Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
Did you know my cats were from Norway? Ben and Alex? Yeah. They're Norwegian forest cats.
Really?
Yeah.
What, you mean through lineage or because they were actually shipped here from...
I'm not giving you my secret, but through lineage. I have the lineage of the great-great-grandfather of Ben, Alex's brother.
Interesting.
Yes. Anyways, so don't distract me here, okay? So,
yeah, Peter L. Brown,
the chair of the chamber,
of the board of directors for the Plymouth Chamber of Commerce, and also
we take it very seriously.
A member of the Pembroke Chamber.
Yep, exactly. So then the big announcement we had last week was the Plymouth Chamber took over Nelson Park. So now Nelson Park, we have the concession stands open. Angelo's Roast Beef took over the concession stand. We have food trucks 3 days a week that come in there.
And two lobsters.
And two lobsters, yes.
Do you really have two lobsters there?
Well, there's one.
Ed, the ALS lobster, right?
Ed's been moved. He's over at the Council on Aging.
What?
Yeah.
Who did that?
We did.
Okay.
We gave him a special seat.
Okay. Well, yeah. At least you'll at least also have somebody who'll keep an eye on it. And
yeah.
Who'll get hijacked.
Well, that's another story for another day.
Yes.
All right. So Nelson Park, the chamber took over the beach, the bathhouse. So now the snack shack's open. Angela's Roast Beef is running it. Yeah. We have the bathrooms we took over the bathrooms, so they're nice and clean. Nice. We have food trucks coming in 3 days a week, which is perfect. And get this.
Drum roll, please.
The chamber is working actively to get that splash pad open.
Wow.
We are working behind the scenes. We know people want the kids to have the splash pad. We are helping. Please be patient. We are working to get it open for you.
Maybe a snow cone machine?
There's going to be like major taco machine. Some of the food trucks.
You get the food trucks. So
yeah, some of the food trucks are going to be amazing.
All right, so what else do you have?
I got a whole list. Waterfront Festival is coming up the 25th. That's the perfect opportunity to come in and see Plymouth as a whole. That's from 10 to 6. Tiny and Sons is also going to be sponsoring the car show that day.
Awesome.
So we're going to have we're taking over the Gristmill parking lot. We usually have about 200 cars. You come up there, you can walk underneath the Gristmill, come up to the top, see a couple of cars, come back down, eat food. Bingo, you're all set. I don't know. We got a lot going on.
Okay. Well, is there a website if folks want to find out more about this information?
Yes, plymouthchamber.org.
It's that easy.
Or plymouthchamber.com.
And I do want folks to know that we like to, Tiny and Sons Glass, one of our fantastic sponsors of Monday Night Talk. We thank you very much. We thank the organization very much. And we thank you, Peter. I've been trying to get Peter in for the past couple of months, but he is in high demand.
Dude, jacked up, dude.
He's high demand, and he's here, well, there, and everywhere.
I did not realize that the way the chair of the chamber works. We have 780 businesses in Plymouth and the surrounding area that are members of the chamber. And Amy Naples, Bob Nolette, Megan Doherty, Amy Clark, Michelle, that we just brought on as admin. They do it all, and we constantly hear the businesses talk about how great the Plymouth Chamber is and how they handle small to medium-sized business.
It's important.
Especially dealing with stuff like this. I mean, we just don't do entertainment and stuff like that, but we work with the economic development, education. We have 31 nonprofits that we work with inside the chamber, and it's just amazing what they do. I cannot say enough about the staff that what they do there.
Chambers are very important.
And it makes me look so good, especially when I stand in front of a room and talk about businesses and how what it means to get involved with the chamber and what these people can do for you is just incredible.
Peter, I want to thank you for joining us here on the program and at least doing a
I still have another 10 minutes, you said.
You do. You're going to come back on the, I think, maybe I'll have you back next week.
Yeah. Well, when's Casey coming back?
Oh, that's an excellent question.
Well, yeah.
That's in the works.
Well, Of course,
we want to have him in, Casey Sherman and Dave Wedge to talk about
his book just came out.
12, so we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
I thank you very much for coming.
Oh, anytime, thank you, Kevin. You do so much for us. I appreciate it.
The good questions you asked as well. You did a nice job as far as posing some of those questions.
I think he gets it. I know the mayor gets it, and I think people in our area, we see it, and we just want it stopped.
Can't ask for any more than that. All right, well, we're going to take a mini break, and when we come back in a couple of moments, I should say, more Monday Night Talk right here at 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
The Yugo Motor Car, introduced 1977. Proudly displayed in shopping malls across America at $4,000, it was the cheapest new car you could buy. And the Yugo exceeded all expectations of cheapness. It would not start, it would not go, the windows would not open. Enter Tony. Fix it again, Tony. He got his Yugo to start, he got his Yugo to go. In fact, the Yugo replaced all his hobbies, except one, kayaking. Pop the kayak in the back hatch, hit a bump, rear window whacks the bow, the window pops out unbroken. The Yugo, tough as glass.
I'm Peter from Tiny and Sons Glass in Pembroke. We've never had to replace a windshield in a Yugo, but for all you non-Yugo drivers out there, we do replace your windshields. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And we have a special guest who is on the line who's going to talk to us a little bit about National Geographic's monster hit series, Wicked Tuna, as it celebrates, it's celebrating 100 episodes. And this is a 90-minute season 7 finale. And joining us right now, gentleman who is no stranger, not only to this program, but to, I believe, the South Shore, we have Captain Paul Hebert on the line. Captain, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Thanks for having me, man.
Hey, absolutely. So I have to say, I think the last time you and I talked, you weren't somebody who had your own boat. You were a first mate.
I was a mate. Yeah, I was a first mate. It's been a long time. I mean, you know, I come from Marshfield. That's where I'm from. I'm from the South Shore, so I'm familiar where you're at.
Well, you got many years. You got many years under your belt. You know, talk to me about being a vital part of this show. I know, you know, going from somebody who early on when this show was starting to take off to now, you're one of the guys in the running for that title of being the top captain.
Yeah, well, every year we try to strive to get that, and, you know, we overcome a lot of obstacles, you know, and now everything's doing good. The show is the highest rated show. It's number one show 7 years in a row on National Geographic. We're very taken back at the position we're in right now, coming to the 100th episode. It's a big deal for us. It's a big milestone for us to hit.
What has the season been like? How, put it in comparison. I believe was it season 5 or season 6 that you got your own book? I think it was 6. That's what I thought.
Season 5 was my first year.
Okay.
Fishing my boat.
Right, but you were slowly, you know, found your way. And again, it's one of those things where, you know, feast or famine, and getting the spot, and, yep, and of course chasing, you know, your old captain Carraro and some of the other young guys, yep, who are out there too. What's it like?
Yeah, well, the first year I got the boat, I put it together. I had to learn the boat. I had to understand people that I had to have work with me. I had my friend Brad the first year, and then obviously they wanted him to get a boat because he's such a good character. So he got a boat. So him and I struggled to find other guys to come with us. And then every year when you get a different guy to fish with you, you got to retrain them everything. Everything that I've learned in 40 years, you have to train a new guy every year. That's why it's very important to have the same guy year after year after year. That brings you way back.
How
big setback if you have to retrain people.
But and you know what's funny is and knowing that you're somebody who was a first mate and you graduated to have your own boat. It's almost like I equate it to being a bass player in a band. You know what? It's cool at first to be in the band playing bass, but then you know what? Maybe I want to play rhythm guitar. You know what? Maybe I'm pretty good at lead, and you lose it. That's why bass players are so hard to get.
Yeah, I've been running boats my whole life, right, since I was a little kid. I just never made enough money to buy my own boat. Now, once the show came, the first 3 or 4 years, you know, we didn't make much money, but every little bit we made on top of fishing, I saved. That's why season 5, I got to buy my own boat. I put everything on the line. I spent every penny I had. I bought my own boat. I had plenty of people that wanted to help me. They wanted to get their hands in my pocket to be part of the show, of course.
Right.
But I didn't go that route. I didn't get a loan. And I got my boat, and now I'm probably going to buy another boat.
See, I have...
And so things are going really good. I'm going to buy a bigger boat, I think.
I got to ask you this, though. You know, when you was first starting out, you know, on the show... It was. I was reading stuff in the trades that you were one of the few that they actually kept a camera on. You had your own dedicated camera. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yep. 24/7. They just let it roll.
What's that like?
Yeah. They would. I didn't even notice them half the time. If I wasn't looking at them, I didn't know they were there. I wouldn't pay no attention. I would just do my job. You got to remember, every day I wake up, I can't wait to go to work.
Right.
Because I love my job. It's what I know. It's what I do best. And what's not to love about it? You get to get off land. You get to go out there and go fish and do what you love to do. It's hardly a job until the weather gets rough, and then it's a real job.
So let me ask you this. You're one of six. You're one of six captains, as we mentioned. Dan Carraro of the FVTuna.com boat. You got Tyler, yep. Tyler with the pinwheel. You have
Had Merch.
Yeah, Had Merch with Dave Marciano. You have Captain
you
Brad.
And you got Tuna with TJ.
Yeah, talk to me.
And then you got Brad on the fish hawk. They're all good fishermen. Every one of those guys are very good fishermen. They have really big boats. My boat's the smallest in the fleet. I'm only a 30-foot boat.
Okay.
Everyone else's boat is 40-plus, 40 to 50 feet, you know? Their boats are really, really big. It's hard to compete with that, but it doesn't look like I'm having too much trouble with it because I end up, you know, up in the top all the time, you know? And these guys, some of them have 3 or 4 guys on their boat. I only have one greenhorn. I got a little boat. I got a greenhorn mate. These guys have yachts, big, huge, you know, 50-foot boats, you know, million-dollar boats with 4 guys on the boat.
Yeah, and you've been...
You know, and I keep right up with them.
Well, so being that it's so competitive, it's such a competitive show, are you friends with everybody, or is it when it's on the line and it's out there to be able to catch those tuna and be able to get... You know, get not only one with a good weight, but you're going to make sure that they got a good core.
I'll put it this way. We all respect each other.
Uh-oh.
On the water.
Okay.
That's you know, how it goes. We all respect each other, and every one of us will say he fishes hard. So whatever we get, we earn it. Nobody gives us anything out there. You just got to take what you got and apply it. Will we probably have a beer together? Probably. But we're not going to go out on a Sunday afternoon with families. You know, every once in a while, if there's a party or something or an outing that we have, we all get together. Very seldomly, it's hard to get us all together. Like, we're all going to be at Bass Pro Shops Sunday night for the last episode, the finale. We're all going to be there together, but it's very hard to... I won't say we're all best friends, we're just competitors, but we all respect each other.
Have you ever thought of, because we know that there's also another episode, they got a spinoff. This is the Wicked Tuna out at Banks. Are you going to get an opportunity to be a part of that one day eventually, or are you?
Well, I was on it the first 2 years.
Right.
And then I bought my boat. So I'm so busy in the wintertime building and doing stuff to my boat, I didn't have time to go down there the past few years. So maybe I'll be able to go down there this year because we filmed that show in January, February, and March. That's the wintertime in the Outer Banks. It's really not a joke down there.
You are listening to Monday Night Talk, and we are talking with Paul Hebert, Captain Paul Hebert, and we're talking about the 100th anniversary of the very immensely popular National Geographic show, Wicked Tuna. And, you know, for those folks who tune in at home, kind of give them kind of the behind the scenes, what it's like for you as a captain, having cameras there. And you know what? Trying to make sure that you're keeping your head on what's going on with you, with all your hooks in the water, and not worrying about the crew that's on board.
That's it. You got to be very careful out there. I mean, every day there's very high stakes when you're out there. I mean, you got to remember it costs a lot of money to do this fishery, and if you don't catch fish consistently, you're going to be in the toilet pretty quick if you don't make enough money,
right,
you know?
Right.
And figuratively speaking, you know, you could go broke pretty quick if you don't catch fish. I know people that haven't caught a fish in 5 years. They lose their boat, they lose their house, they lose their family, their wife, everything. You know, a lot of people think it's very easy to do because we make it look easy on TV. They got to remember it is TV.
So I got to ask you, looking back over the last 100 episodes, of course, I have to ask you, even especially the earlier years, whether it's earlier years or, you know, your first couple of years as a captain, give us a memorable moment that folks at home have had a chance to see.
They're all memorable. every one of those are memorable. Every episode I've done is very memorable.
Is there a particular time that the cameras were there that you were like, I'm glad that that they were rolling?
Yeah, the day that Brad and I caught hooked up to four fish was one of the highlights on my boat. The first year I had my boat,
right?
Brad and I came down from the bottom all the way to the top.
Yeah,
was a very big accomplishment. We blew everybody away.
Well, and if I remember correctly in that series, and because you were talking about it, you know, being able to have kind of a symbiotic relationship with another person that you're working with, and you know, the advantage that other boats have is they got folks who have been there for a while. You're somebody who you guys. There was a point where Brad almost walked away. Well, am I correct?
Yeah. I guess there's some behind the scenes there that people don't know, but I mean, you go through a lot of ups and downs on the boat. You know, when you go out and you're not making money, it's time to make a decision when you have a family to pay for. But he stuck it out. He took a gamble, and look at him now. He's got his own boat. He's on the show, doing really well, competing with everybody else now. It's not an easy thing. It's not easy to get picked to be on the show.
Right, and have people follow your life. I mean, again, you have children, am I correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
Do you ever envision, you look at Dave Marciano, and he has his kids working on the boat. Do you ever envision that, you know, if depending on your kids, if they get fall in love with fishing?
I would never want my kids to do this for a job, ever. I would like them to do it because they love to do it.
Right.
I would never want them. Fishing's way too hard to make a living. It's no way to get into the way the government's making all the rules and the, you know, the National Marine Fisheries and the state. It's just, there's no future in it for someone to make a sustainable living at. Like, you know, I'm 53 years old. You know, I'm on my down cycle right now. I would never want to pass this on to my kids, you know, because it's a, you know, the tuna fishing's very healthy, but everything else, you can't make a living just tuna fishing. You got to be able to do other fisheries. If you're going to be a fisherman, you got to be all in. You got to go lobstering. You got to go tuna fishing. You got to go harpooning. You got to drag, and you got to do it all if you need to make a living at it. It's very tough to make a living doing one fishery. You've got to have a backup plan. Everyone that fishes has a backup plan.
It sounds like you have a backup plan, and it sounds like all the things you mentioned.
Oh, I do. I have a very good backup plan. Yeah. So I'm going to be like a guide. I'm going to teach people how to do what I do. Nothing like catching a trophy fish. I mean, you don't have to do it just here. You can go to Carolina, you can go to Florida, you can go to California. I'm going to California next week.
Wow.
To a charity. We do a charity event down there every year. It's called the Friends of Rollo. Tuna Wars, we named it. We've been doing it for 5 years, Marciano and I. Every year we go down there, we raise about $100,000 a weekend for disabled children. Otherwise, they'd never be able to see the ocean. You know, they'd right. never be able to experience marine life. So we give them the opportunity to go out on a boat with their family and experience marine life.
Your years as far as being on the water and looking at between the Atlantic and the Pacific, is there a stark difference in the methods you use in order to be able to catch fish?
Everything's different over here. Everything is different. Just down the eastern seaboard from here to Carolina is a totally different way to catch them.
Right.
They troll and we anchor up. And Florida's the same way. They usually troll down there too. They don't. And, you know, New Jersey and New York, they usually troll a chum like we do. Everywhere is different. The currents of the waters are different everywhere you go.
So we just got a couple of minutes left with you, Paul, here. And, you know, congratulations on the first 100 episodes. Talk to me about looking forward to, you know, the next 100.
Yeah, well, that would be sweet, huh? Being able to go another 100 episodes, that would be amazing. I mean, the milestone that we just broke, making it to 100 episodes, I mean, if it ended today, I would be very happy. I mean, everything's good. I got my boat. Everything's running good. My family's healthy, and we're okay, so everything's good with me. I mean, hopefully next year I can get a bigger boat, but I'm going to take my time and look around. That would be one of my dreams, to be able to own a bigger boat.
Okay.
That way I can do it. I could be out there and be more comfortable.
Okay. So I would ask you this. What would you want to say to either the folks at National Geographic or Pilgrim Media Group, who I guess produced this, in regards to, you know, their hard work to put this show together and air it?
Yeah, they get, you know, commended every day by how hard they work. I can't imagine taking 30,000 hours of footage.
Oh, my God.
And being able to filter through that in a few months.
Yeah.
I just, it's amazing how they put that together. I wouldn't want their job. I think we got it a lot easier than they do, that's for sure. They really work hard putting this crap together.
We know that you're a guy, when you were here before, do you have a website? Do you have merch or anything that folks
want? We do. It's under wickedpaulgear.com, and I have a charter site, Wicked Pisser Charters, and then I can give my email at paulhebert215@yahoo.com.
Well, Paul, we want to thank you so much for joining us and being a guest, and congratulations on how hard you have worked as an individual out on the water, and we look forward to talking to you again come the 200th episode.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
It would be awesome.
I'd be myself.
Well,
thanks, man.
We'll let you go, and you listen, you have a good one, and be safe, my friend.
You got it. Have a good day.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Kids love snow. Kevin Gallerani, 8 years old, winter 1986. Poor Kevin. No snow all winter except March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. It snowed. Real snow. Kevin scrunches together that compressed snowball, dense as an iceberg, puts it in a freezer next to his red, white, and blue popsicles. He's saving it for the 4th of July patriotic snowball toss. The glorious 4th finally arrives. Kevin launches that glorious ice ball right through the windshield of Dave Gallerati's Jeep. Funny, that's where he scraped off the snow in the first place. Better work on that aim, Kevin.
Windshield broken? Tiny has a new location at Kevin's shop. Yeah, that Kevin. Cape Auto Body, Plymouth. Or just call 1-888-64-TINYS. And thank you.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options, like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
We return to Monday Night Talk, of course, right here on 959WATD, World Wide Web, 959WATD.com. And our next guest, we had this gentleman on, I want to say a couple of months ago, and it was kind of the talk of the conversation in regards to adult recreational marijuana. That's not where our conversation starts, but we welcome back Marshfield native Bill Carpenter, Mayor Bill Carpenter from Brockton.
Yeah, great to be back here with you.
Want to start out, you know, as we were kind of during the break, you were mentioning you have a new chief of staff. We should probably kind of get a little interest into talking about Nick Giaquinto.
Yep.
Who is so Quinto or Quinto?
Giaquinto with an O on
that's
the
right,
end.
That's right. Okay.
So and Darren Duarte, who's been my chief of staff for the past couple years, has moved on to the Brockton Police Department in a newly created position of communications and community outreach, and we're excited about the work that he's doing over at the police department already. But being here in Marshfield with you, and for folks that don't know my hometown where I grew up, and my dad, God bless him, is still alive here at the age of 91. But Nick Giaquinto just elevated to become my new chief of staff just this past week. And ironically, Nick and I are both graduates of Marshfield High School. So I would love to know what the odds were. You might have been able to get on that wager at some point that the both the mayor and chief of staff for the city of Brockton would be graduates of Marshfield High School. Although I have to acknowledge we did graduate 32 years apart. But
I was curious.
Nick, I believe, was class of 06. And for those old enough to remember, I was in the class of 74. So,
well, both of you were in the old high school, though, right? Or was Nick, when was the new high school built? Just a couple of years ago, I think.
Right. Oh, the one they tore down was the brand new one that was built while I was a student there. So that's what you, when you know you're starting to get a little bit older, is that growing up in Marshfield, what the high school they tore down was actually built in two phases. One was in the addition to the original older high school, and then they built an addition to the addition, and the two new buildings became the high school. Long story short, I was in the first group of students to go into both of those new buildings that became Marshfield High School. Mm-hmm. And have lived long enough to have those brand new buildings I went to school in deemed to be obsolete and torn down. So it's
kind of a sad thing.
But the new school is absolutely beautiful, and the Marshfield students going there are very fortunate to have that beautiful facility.
Just staying on Nick just for a moment here, and Nick has been with since your administration took office from day one. Why is Nick such a natural fit?
Well, you're right. Nick came on board with us during our first month in office back in January 2014. Nick holds a master's in public administration from UMass Boston. He went to undergrad at Suffolk, worked at the State House before he came to work for me. And interestingly, Nick's very first spot in at the State House was as an intern for then Representative Jim Cantwell, who I know has gone on to bigger and better things with Senator Markey now, and I just had the opportunity to speak to Jim last week. But so there's all kinds of Marshfield connections through the Carpenter administration in Brockton.
Let's start off talking a little bit about the city of Brockton. You finally get a budget, I believe, that is going to be in place. What was the budget process like this year? How has it been different from prior years where you've put forth a budget? And, of course, you go through the process with the city council, taking a look at it, making the cuts, and then, of course, ratifying it in the end.
I I'm always disappointed, as any chief executive would be, with a couple of the cuts. But, you know, Kevin, I'm also very cognizant and very respectful of our system of checks and balances and the responsibility of the city council to do their due diligence. And you know, they certainly can make cuts where they feel, they feel they should, that we could save some money and live with a cut in services or personnel. Overall, I'm very satisfied with the budget. I think that the council was thoughtful and debated and took their time. I think they did listen to us on reconsidering a couple of cuts that they had on the table. The one cut that stood that I don't agree with is eliminating or not funding our request to convert a part-time position to a full-time position in the assessor's office. It's a critically important position, and we're hoping we'll get an opportunity to continue to work with the council on that one. But overall, you know, the challenge is the school budget. We're okay on the city side this year. In the budget, you know, we are sending $3 million over and above the foundation budget requirement to the schools to try to help them out, because the state local funding for education, Chapter 70, for poor gateway cities like Brockton is just totally insufficient. And their own foundation formula review commission of a couple of years ago found that. So I think we're inching closer and closer to an equity in education lawsuit. We retained our legal representation, and within the next 30 days or so, we'll be filing against the opioid manufacturers, as over 100 cities and towns have done now. So now that we've got that in place, I think it's going to allow us to focus even further on the pursuit of an equity in education lawsuit that we are already actively working on.
As I attended the budget hearings, the one thing that I heard echoed a couple of different times was, what can be done as far as the contracts that are in place for the various unions? And I know that Jay Condon a couple times saying, well, those are already in place. You really can't do anything. But it could be something, it could be food for thought for future budgets. And knowing that probably for fiscal 20, you probably got a couple of budgets that are up. Well, how, as the mayor, as somebody who has a conversation with a negotiating team that sits at the table, what's your thought process moving forward for your next budget cycle?
Well, I think some of those comments are a bit naive. I think some of them are a bit politically motivated. I mean, I think most council has realized that, we have 16 different collective bargaining units in the city. I'm a pro-union guy, even though I sit on the management side right now. I'm proud of our record of working hand in hand with our unions to get to reasonable settlements. And I think when they say, well, we'll do a wage freeze for 3 years, you can't do it. It has to be bargained. And the unions are not going to bargain a reduction in their compensation. When I took office 2014, 15 out of the 16 bargaining units were out of contract. Only one bargaining unit had a contract. That was the firefighters. And that agreement had been reached a couple months before the election, conveniently. And I was the guy that ended up paying for that contract. But today, as of a few days ago, on June 30th, every single bargaining unit in the city is under contract. When all those contracts were settled, we had to catch up on a lot of retroactive compensation that was due. I think we've done a great job in that area. And the salary increases that we've seen in my four budgets have been, at best, middle of the pack in what's gone on in municipalities across the across the state. They've averaged 1.75% to 2% per year. The reality is, and particularly with the public safety unions, I think what they're not really saying out loud is they're saying, public safety unions. Those are the big contracts. Those are the big money compensation.
Like $23 million, right?
The big contracts, right. Yeah. And the reality is, I think any mayor would tell you this, if you can't come to a reasonable settlement, then it goes to arbitration. It goes in front of a board called the JLMC, where the public safety unions win 90% of the time. And so sometimes, you know, as the chief executive, you're in a position where I may settle and come to a deal. That doesn't mean I'm completely satisfied with it, but it does mean that I'm being given the advice that if we don't make this deal and it does go to arbitration, down the road, it's going to cost the city a lot more money in a settlement, in an arbitration settlement, and then we'll owe more money with back years retroactive. So I think we've tried to be fiscally responsible, get the best deal possible, maintain good working relations with all of our municipal unions, and I think we've accomplished that. So, you know, I don't think our budget position is any different than any other city around the Commonwealth. The expenses of particularly personnel are going up faster than state aid and property tax revenue does.
It's funny when you had mentioned about the bargaining, if it goes to that panel. I heard your CFO say something, Jay Condon, say exactly the same thing, is that it's not favorable for the municipality.
No.
It's more so for the unions. And speaking of Jay Condon, I know there was a tip of the cap to him the final night of the hearings, where in February he is going to be a free man, so to speak. He will,
yeah.
And knowing that he has been in the city, he kind of helped rescue the city back in the 90s. Talk to me about the job of having to find the next Jay Condon.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, with Jay, it is a tremendous loss to the city. Jay is, I think he'll be at about 30 years of service when he retires. He did come in when the city was in dire financial straits, and he not only turned the city around, but I know how important his thoughts and his guidance are to me. And when I speak to former mayors, they all feel the same way. You know, this is a guy, a naval officer, graduate of the Wharton School of Finance, with 3 decades of experience doing city budgets. We will not replace Jay Condon. We will we'll find new leadership for the department, but we won't replace him. You can't replace him. And I've done everything I can to try to convince him to stay another year or two, but no, he's earned his retirement. He's 70. He's not a kid. Mm. And he deserves to have some healthy, happy years of retirement after all these years of service to the city. But there will be a process. You know, we're entering that process right now. Immediately in front of us is the personnel director. Our personnel department has certainly gone under a very thorough top-to-bottom review over the last 9 or 10 months from the outside by the Collins Center at UMass Boston at the McCormick School of Public Administration. And they came in with a report, their final report, probably about a month and a half or so ago. It was presented to the City Council. But, you know, sometimes these retirements and changes present an opportunity. And with the retirement of our current personnel director, I do believe there is an opportunity to really embrace most of the recommendations of the UMass Boston Collins Center report. And so I think, you know, we're going to dramatically change the model. We're going to go from an outdated personnel framework to a 21st century human resources department. Ultimately, there will be 2 new positions created to replace the outgoing personnel director.
Maureen Cruz. Yep.
And I'm very, I'm actually very excited about the future, but that future of the department begins with the selection of new leadership. And right now we have the new job description for a new position of human resources director is currently in front of the City Council. That's an ordinance position, and the council has that right now. And simultaneously, we have retained the Collins Center at UMass Boston to conduct the search and oversee the selection. So the job was posted about a week or two ago, and the search has begun. And, you know, this process will take several months. We're going to hope to have a new human resources director in place by the fall, And in the interim, I've named an interim director for 60 days just to keep the department running. But I think this selection of new leadership and a whole new framework for human resources is really going to be very beneficial to the city. And I think particularly in our city's minority communities that are concerned about past history of hiring practices, I think this will really be embraced. I think there'll be a lot of changes in the manner in which we hire new employees, and I think that everyone will support it once we have it in place.
So Maureen's going to officially she's officially retiring as of when, or she's leaving the position as of when?
July 6th.
Okay. So it's interesting you mentioned the Collins Center, and I believe that you have utilized the Collins Center for when you did the search for the DPW, and you actually had that department kind of looked at through them, right?
Yeah, we've done a lot of work with the Collins Center at UMass Boston. They work with over 100 Massachusetts cities and towns, providing technical assistance, outside help, and it's been a great relationship. They have done several projects for us. I've always been, I think that they've helped point us in the right direction and helped us update a lot of from technology to procedure to budget. So I thought this was a perfect role for the Collins Center. And I think with the questions that have been asked in the community about specifically hiring practices, I thought it was important for this really thorough top-to-bottom review that it come from outside. It couldn't be internal. It had to be bringing in the experts from the outside, having them take the hard look at us. They produced a lengthy report that has a couple pages of recommendations, and as I go through those recommendations, I think we'll be able to embrace almost all of them. But the first step is to go through this huge transformation and restructuring. It will be a whole new structure, restructuring of what is now known as personnel and will become human resources. The first step is to get the new leadership, and then there will be a number two position that's also created, and the new director will be very involved in the process of the selection of the number two position. It's, you know, in baseball, you hire the manager before the pitching coach. The manager wants to have some say in who the pitching coach is. And I think that's how we're looking at this new leadership for human resources.
Before we move on to our next topic, just digressing back to Jay Condon, could you retain him as a consultant? Could he be a paid consultant if needed?
Absolutely, and that's what I hope will happen. I'm hoping that Jay will be willing to do some part-time consulting with us for a couple of years after he leaves. He said he's willing to consider it, but I think that his feeling is that we need to select his replacement first, and then that's a decision that his replacement has to be involved in. I think Jay is saying, if the new CFO would like me in that role, I'd be willing to do it, but I'm not going to stay past the time that I'm wanted.
Okay. And it would also depend on his tee times over at Thorny Lee, too, right?
Yeah. I hope he's playing on the municipal course at DW Field.
Which is also very popular as well. So, again, we're speaking with Brockton-Man Bill Carpenter, who is our guest, talking about, you know, it's a hot topic these days in regards to adult recreational marijuana, and not only just Brockton, but in a lot of communities, as they're kind of looking at it and seeing. State, of course, is just kind of slowly rolling along. I think they're just about okayed their first license. Talk to me. You and I had this conversation several months ago talking about it. You were very excited about it, but it seems as though it's kind of, it's got to a point where there are more questions than there are answers.
Well, I still believe we're going to get there. It's you know, patience is not one of my virtues, so I would wish the pace would go a little bit faster, but I do believe that we're going to get there. You know, I don't think this discussion about adult recreational marijuana today is really about marijuana. I think this is a discussion about money and revenue. Adult use recreational marijuana is here in the city of, in the state of Massachusetts, Commonwealth of Mass. And it's just a matter of which cities and towns will take advantage of the opportunity to reap a lot of financial benefit, and which ones will choose to sit on the sidelines and watch others reap millions of dollars of revenue. I don't believe the city of Brockton is in a position to sit on the sidelines and turn its nose up at millions of dollars per year. And I don't think most of the taxpayers want us to turn our nose up at millions of dollars of revenue per year. Whatever the marijuana use, marijuana consumption is in the city of Brockton, what it was last year, what it was this year, what it will be next year with legalized retail sales, I don't think the consumption changes. All that changes is where it's going to be purchased. And, you know, our two medical dispensaries have applied for the conversion to also sell adult use recreational, and under the state regulations, they'll be grandfathered and they'll be allowed to expand into those. So I think we're getting closer. Meeting with a couple counselors yesterday, they indicated that they're looking to take this up in mid-July. And, you know, I anticipate there'd be some debate. I've already had numerous conversations with various folks, including several of the city councilors, in terms of embracing a different approach on the zoning siting of these. I had originally proposed putting all six in the downtown business district. Clearly, some folks have concerns with that. And so I think that I think there's a compromise. I've looked very closely recently at Lynn, a city that I think is a very good analogy to Brockton, has already enacted their zoning and their ordinances, and they're proceeding with the issuing of licenses. And they took an approach of treating the retail marijuana businesses like package stores, and only in certain commercial business districts and subject to obtaining a special permit from the Zoning Board of Appeals, which would guarantee the neighborhood and the community an opportunity to be heard on each individual location before a license would be granted. I think there's going to be room for a middle ground there where perhaps we could keep a couple of the licenses downtown, but then maybe spread the other four out to other parts of the city. So I think it's very much... it's a moving target right now, but I think it is evolving. I think a majority of the council would like to get this done. Certainly, you know, a lot of clergy are opposed, and we anticipated that. But I just think the debate as to whether marijuana is a good idea or not has already been settled. Brockton is a yes city. A majority of the residents of Brockton voted in favor of the marijuana ballot question. And I think it's now time to move on and talk about money and talk about impacts on the city. So what this discussion really centers around is how do we reap the maximum financial benefit with the minimum amount of negative impacts on the city.
Is there a middle ground to be gained with the clergy? I know the clergy are the ones who are strongly pushing.
No.
No.
And I have a very great relationship with our clergy. I meet with a group of pastors monthly. I've done that since my first year in office. A couple of the pastors that are amongst the leaders of the movement to block retail marijuana sales in the city, I consider them to be friends. But, you know, sometimes, you know, I think sometimes you agree to disagree. I think we do it very respectfully. I listen carefully to what the pastors have to say. I understand some of their concerns, but I think some of them aren't practical. I think whatever the impacts of legal marijuana are going to be whether we happen to have some shops in Brockton or not. So I think that's where it differs. I would, and I've expressed this to the pastors, if they really believe that this is a bad idea and that a new vote would come out with a new result, then they should be pursuing that on the state level, not on the local level. I don't see what you accomplish just going after one community when, you know, Taunton, as an example, is already way ahead of us on marijuana. Rockland is moving forward on marijuana. Lynn is moving forward. So, I mean, there are other, you know, blocking it in one community doesn't change the overall picture. But I'm respectful of their position, but no, I don't think there's a compromise. I think they're pretty dug in, and they're going to do everything they can to block it. And I'm going to hope that the majority of the councilors will work with us reasonably. You know, this year, our last couple budgets, we lost 150 school teachers in the city of Brockton over the last three budgets. Even after the recent recalls, we're losing another 46 right now. We're still trying to get a few of them back. I just don't know how in good conscience you take a school system that's being decimated financially like Brockton's is right now, and how you let 46 school teachers be lost and out there laid off, while saying that you're not willing to accept millions of dollars of local tax revenue. I can't do it. I've got to do what's in the best interest of the city.
Do you kind of get that there are some individuals in the community that don't realize that you're kind of a pragmatic kind of a official? That you like, you look ahead instead of being reactive and going, hey, they're doing it. You're being more pragmatic?
Yeah, I mean, I think a good mayor has to be pragmatic. It's a very unique leadership position. It's not like a legislator. It's really not like any other public service job. It is very unique. And where you see it is I attend mayor's conferences regularly, as you know, in the national mayor's conferences. Mayors are the most nonpartisan group of folks in leadership in public service you'll ever find. I'm very active in the U.S. Conference of Mayors. I attend some of the other mayor's conferences. And at our mayor's conferences, you see Republican mayors and Democratic mayors sitting side by side, working together on the issues that impact cities in this country. The opioid epidemic, creating jobs, public school education, public safety. Mayors all work together on these issues. And I wish we could get Washington to work in the same manner. But if someone says that I'm pragmatic and that I'm results oriented, I take that as a compliment. I think that's what I'm supposed to be.
Well, we know there's a moratorium on until something is worked out in regards to ordinance. If you have your druthers, when do you hope that you could be start putting out, giving out the first licenses? Is it by this fall, or is it the latest early next year?
Well, I think we'll figure that out over the next couple months. The ball is really in the city council's court at this point. The council controls a lot of this on the local level. The zoning, which is a key, is absolutely a responsibility of the city councils, as is the ability to pass ordinances for local rules and regulations. So the piece that's in my court, the host community agreement, we've completed that. We have our host community agreements ready to go. I've entered into them with the two medical dispensaries so that they could get their licensing paperwork going. And I'm hoping we can get ready to move the needle on this. I think some councilors, you know, expressed the feeling that they wanted to get through the budget and then after the budget they would take this on. But at the bottom line is, every day that we delay, the city is losing money. And we're a city that cannot afford to lose money. So I don't think we can afford an extra 6-month delay. I think we have to be thoughtful. I think we have to build a consensus. We want to do it right. However, time is of the essence. We can't just keep kicking the can down the road. I filed the original legislation with the city council for retail recreational sales over 3 months ago. They've yet to hold a hearing on it. Now, I do believe that they're getting ready to work on this now. We've certainly had open lines of communication with the legislative council. We need to get this done. The answer to your question, if it were up to me, we'd have the local oversight figured out, have the zoning ordinances and rules and regulations in place by Labor Day. You know, let's use the summer to get this done so that firms can get their licenses from the state. Because from the time you grant a license to a firm, they're gonna need 3 to 6 months to get up and running. So I want to work with the council on this. I do feel that, you know, taxes are a big issue in every community, and they are in Brockton. And I don't believe the taxpayers in our city who are burdened with the property taxes they already have want to pay higher taxes just so that we can make a philosophical statement on adult use of marijuana.
We're just about out of time. Anything we haven't touched upon, but you want to take a moment just to kind of just
We could spend a few hours on things we haven't touched upon.
Yeah, guy who's very friendly to a microphone.
Yeah.
I know that. I know
that's
that.
What they say, I've never met one that I didn't like. Yeah.
Let's not forget. I mean, you. I produced a couple of your radio programs, so I know.
It was good training. It was good training to become a mayor someday. You know, we're excited about the future of the city of Brockton. Our downtown revitalization is moving forward. We'll be breaking ground in September on a new parking garage. Downtown parking garage will hold over 400 cars. That we really do believe is a catalytic project in the downtown. It's going to unlock the whole north end of the downtown business district for redevelopment. I'm excited. We've already the first of many projects of market rate housing in the downtown opened recently at the Standard Modern Printing Building. We've got a couple other projects that are just about ready to break ground and several more in the pipeline behind them. So I think the next 12 to 24 months in the city of Brockton is going to be a very exciting time. And I invite our friends from your South Shore listening area to come visit the City of Champions.
Here he is, Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter, our guest for this segment. Mayor, thank you for coming in.
Great to be here with you.
You got it. Well, unfortunately, that is all the time that we have coming up. Stan Blackmer in the game, South Shore Live. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.